100 Word Stories.
Good morning, everyone. This is Lawrence Simon of the 100 Word Stories podcast at one a day until the day I die.com. Lovely URL, isn't it? Well, woke up this morning, so let's go ahead and do a show. Today's weekly challenge is on the subject of where is the time gone? Where has the time gone? Do you know where it went? I don't know where it went. In this day of fast food and instant coffee, there's so much time, isn't there? Or do we just compact it more and more into the same moments? Let's find out what Lizzie Goodcough thinks of that. And then we'll move on to the next person. Maybe we'll do these all at once. No, that would just be a chaotic jumble. Here's Lizzie and her story. Enjoy.
Mark my words, son, time flies. The six-year-old Tommy nodded diligently. His grandfather surely knew about these things. One day you're young and the next. Tommy wasn't quite sure of this, though. When he was born, his grandfather was already old. He had gray hair and wrinkles. Let's go. We still have a few hours till sunset. And they played football. His grandfather moved quite well for an old guy. Years later, when his granddad died, all Tommy could think of was that afternoon. Time does fly, Granddad, he whispered softly, looking at the sun hiding behind the horizon. This was my story for this week. Drop by my blog at lizziegoodcough.blogspot.com and talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Lizzie. Food for thought for some of you grandpas out there. My strategy for living forever is never to become a grandpa so that no child will wonder back at my death. Next up is John Musico, who will probably play at my funeral. John, let's hear a story.
Time Cures All by John Musico. The Alzheimer's patient returned to a psychiatric appointment accompanied by his wife. During the interview, the patient's wife, as visits prior, answered all questions for him while shooting glares at him with her eyes to keep quiet and just sit still. He wasn't his usual expressionless, mute self that day. The wife declared to the psychiatrist, "He has clearly deteriorated." The doctor explained, "He is advancing to disinhibition. That means he can no longer suppress his urges." She replied, "I still don't understand." The patient turned to her and said, smiling,
"That means time to shut up, bitch!"
Damn, that's harsh. Thank you, John. You know, you won't be able to tell when that phase hits me. Oh, sorry. Just another day at work, I suppose. What? I should play Jeffrey's stories before I say something stupid. Oh, okay. Here's Jeffrey.
Hello, this is Jeffrey Fisher. Since last week Chelsea provided some background information on herself, I thought I would do the same this week. My day job, I am an economist with the federal government. I've worked at the same agency for a little over 20 years. So in that capacity, I spend a lot of time reading and a little time writing. And a lot of people might suggest that that's both reading and writing fiction, but it's not supposed to be. So I've enjoyed the last couple of years writing 100-word stories for this podcast. It's been an enjoyable outlet for me. But anyway, I appreciate the chance to be part of the podcast every week. With that, let me get on with the stories. My first story is called On the Case. The police detective glanced around the ransacked room. "Okay, sir. Just tell me what is missing." The homeowner looked frantic. "The thieves took everything of value. My computer, my TV, phone. But I can replace all that. The one thing that's irreplaceable was a gift from my grandfather." "Don't worry, sir. We'll try to get your property back. Just describe this gift for me." "It's a mid-century watch. It didn't cost much, but it has great sentimental value for me. Oh, please, Detective, find out for me. Where did the Timex go? All right, I will pause for groans here, and then we'll just move on. This story is called Golden Years. I lean back in the easy chair and turn to my wife. It's so nice to be able to sit here with you without a care in the world. I guess that's what we worked so hard to achieve. It seemed like only yesterday when you were my bride. Now look at us, content to just while away the hours until we die. Where did the time go? Jennifer peered at me over her glasses. Jeffrey, sarcasm doesn't become you. When you married me, you knew I liked to watch Downton Abbey. It's only an hour, and if you don't like it, read a book. Well, I guess it's just as well that my wife doesn't like Downton Abbey because we have only one TV in the house, and it would be difficult to go and read a book. Well, those are my stories for this week. I'll be back next week.
Thank you, Jeffrey. You know, Planet Money and Freakonomics are two of my favorite podcasts. It just shows that economists can be awesome, just like this podcast shows. Maybe we're all three on the same level. Yeah. Thank you, Jeffrey. Moving on, let's go over to Richard and see what he's come up with this week. Richard, go for it.
Well, hello, podcast listeners. Draw closer to the campfire, for I have stories for you. My first is part 49 of George's story. It's called Time to Go. Seeing the look on Rasputin's face, George started babbling and looking for an escape route. He glanced at his watch. Oh my goodness! Where has the time gone? I'm terribly late. I really must be going. Terribly sorry. Rasputin's sudden firm grip upon his shoulder said otherwise. Without haste, the big man led him across the chapel, knocked on the anteroom door, and roughly pushed him through. "And where the hell do you think you've been?" said a familiar voice sarcastically. Sat upon a Sunday school chair far too small for her was Emily, and boy, did she look annoyed. And my next story is called Time Lord. The first time that I met him, I was thoroughly impressed. Long scarf, floppy hat, and a deep, booming voice. He told me he was a Time Lord. "I keep time safe. I ensure it runs as it should. All the time in the universe passes through my hands. Never ask where the time has gone, for I am its keeper, and it comes to me." He gave me an enigmatic wink before stepping into a nearby phone box. The next time I met him, I wasn't quite so impressed. Turns out he owns the clock shop on the High Street. And story number three is called The Timekeeper. "Who wants to live forever?" That was the advertising slogan that accompanied the launch of The Timekeeper. And despite its high price tag, millions were sold. The Timekeeper is a revolutionary new product that captures all your wasted, lost, and spare time throughout your life, keeping it safely and securely stored until your final moment. Then simply press the chrono key to release the stored time, extending your lifetime far beyond mortal years. Of course I bought one. And now on my deathbed, I pressed the key. Nothing. Frantically, I tried again and again. Turns out, the timekeeper was just another scam. Would you like another one? Okay, just this once. This one's called Einstein. Einstein got it right, but Hawking messed up the mechanics. Time is relative, but black holes? Sorry, Stephen, you blew it. a crushing singularity where time itself grinds to a pulverizing halt, it's simply incorrect. What really occurs is that the time that's in short supply, the long summer days, memorable moments, happy hours, the times that seem to be over in an instant, these are captured by black holes, stretched to infinite length, then squeezed out the other side, where they become those interminably long bus journeys, embarrassed silences, and the unending hours spent in the dentist's waiting room. And that's it. Go back to your tents and sleep well. I'll speak to you next week. Goodbye.
Thank you, Richard. We'll keep that in mind. Wait, keep what in mind? Next up we have Tura, who's a little early this week. I love how Tura is early some weeks, a little on the back end some other weeks, and then just, it's cool when people send them in at different times, because it's like sometimes it's the same order every time, but it takes a little inspiration. But with all the topics out there already, you know, the ideas come easier, doesn't it? What do you think? Do you think it's a good idea to have a list of all the upcoming topics? Or does that ruin the surprise? Ruin the surprise. Sound off in the things that begin with C. Oh, here's Tura.
Live fast. We'd certainly done that. Not the die young part, though. Then we'd all moved on, drifted apart. But you never lose friends like that. So when his son called me, I had to go. They'd had to cut out one lung, and the other wasn't up to much. We talked over old times, although truth is, he was already slipping away, and his memory was pretty vague. His eyes suddenly clouded with uncertainty, and he feverishly grasped my arm. "Tell me, Jake," he quavered. "We had fun, didn't we? We had fun?" "Yes," I said. "We had fun."
Are we having fun? I hope you're having fun. Tura had fun. But that's okay. It's not over. It's never over. One weekly challenge after another. As long as there are weeks, there are challenges. Thank you, Tura. Next up, we have Sing. Sing, sing. Oh, that's Sing. Chris Mooney, sing. Settle back, relax, and listen to the latest chapter of his ongoing novel in small pieces, teeny tiny bite-size pieces.
Foreign Madam and the White Yogi, a verse novel in progress by Chris Mooney Singh. In this installment, Margot has confrontation with the Brahmin priest. She blinked with daylight. The storm had broken. Birds were fluttering, stealing thatch. "Atul!" He had migrated from the chair to her bed end. "Your mother will be worried." "No, madam. She knows that you are sick. Pass me water, will you?" As he jumped down, Yudi jumped up, then sank his butt, wetting the concrete floor. Atul passed her a tumbler and let him out, then squatted to sluice away the puppy puddle, with half a bucket brooming the yellow runoff out the door. "Oh, you're a darling," Margot said. She was glad for the boy, but wished Yogi was here. Thanks to little man, Margot didn't starve. He brought sabzi roti, packed by neighborly women, vegetable and chapati, spiced over hot plate fires from the rainbow tray of powders, always with turmeric, haldi, adding its yellow bias, the Indian cure-all antibacterial ginger cousin, along with mirch, chili that burns out fever. Atul was courier for the billions of women network, local, unsung chapter, rolling dough into action. Her sickness brought acceptance. Bukhar, the fever leveler, breaks people, then bonds them. None escapes what tries to wrench body from soul, dandled in the hands of the death god Yama. Walking to the Mandir, Red Temple compound, for post-fever reboot inside the gate of Om. Time overspent with newbie green hearts, looking out, not inward, being a tree, a shade giver. She sighed, relieved. Ding-a-linging the god bell, bowing body down before the fire pit, sprinkling smuggery, sandalwood sawdust, rose petals with steel spoon, camphor, dhoop, seven grains to seek guidance, feed the mouth of Agni, learn your life's role, Q&A with the fire god, stay still, ear-tuned, source ominous weather. The action of bowing on warm marble blessed her forehead, impressing a seed. Open sesame. The villagers bowed here with their skinny hopes, requesting rain, a cow, or marriage matches. The scale of wants was simple milk and roti. Meanwhile, a man ladled drops of ghee from time to time to appease the fire god. He was the Brahmin following tradition, who also tilled a plot, although his brood lived out the back mainly on offerings of store supplies and grimy rupee notes earned for wedding services and funerals, harvest mantras. His birth horoscope spoke auspicious outcomes, softened truths. She fluttered rupee butterflies onto marble. Eyes lit up. He chanted with more vigour. The English-knowing priest soon spoke aloud.
Where is your husband? We are missing him.
Yogi is busy. He will be back. She sat. Her eyes searched the flames and climbed the wall. Shiva was framed above in embossed tin, the lord of yoga in his lotus pose with three-pronged trishul, a cobra for a scarf, was well scorched by the rising Havan heat. Then Yudi barked, wagging his happy tail. Rushing in, he leapt to clean her face. The fire priest flared up. Get it out! Get it out! A tongue had spoken. No dog could enter heaven. For his next trick, he piddled by the fire. The priest rose livid, scrabbling for a stick. Margot should have laughed, but the fever, her hard-to-send-off guest, had made her titchy. She stood up, tree-like, to protect the dog. Don't touch the little thing, it's just a puppy. The Brahmin glared at the untouchable pariah. Don't even think it, or I'll crack your head. She grabbed the iron trishul against the wall, ready to wield like battle goddess Durga, till the pissing war became an Indian standoff. He left in a huff. She cleaned the place and went. This argy-bargy did not endear her to the prestige priest and his close cronies. Revere the goddess or just plain fear her. Such men make witches from strong yonis. These ruling males were at a loss, and foreign madam got a wide berth. But children knew she was the boss. Thus Gora, the potter, discerned her worth, like Om Prakash and Janadan, whose kids love school. To make amends, Gora sent cups and Janadan a melon each day to her. She earned friends while the burning priest stayed on fire and gave bad press as the village crier. Ram, her closest neighbour, husband of Kamal Devi, urged by Atul, dropped by to do odd jobs, fixing the water pump handle loose on its ratchet and mending the rotten gaps of her enclosure. He had no children in school, but following his wife's kind thought for madam, did what he could, clearing the sludge build-up in the runoff channel. Some old women passing looked with hard eyes, wondering why this man was helping out so much the white foreign madam whose own husband should be doing her own chores. Not all their children taken from farm duties. She began to see the village folk divide, as the self-appointed and the humble few, Kurava cousins, Pandavas everywhere. A woman without husband and protector was danger time and a gossip topic. Without school, she lacked a postal service to send needful messages to parents. But Atul and a handful of the keen traded chores for some close-up lessons. The poorer children had the appetite. As the monsoon poured down in fever bursts, each day she would read or act a story from the Mahabharata book, this one in verse, with Atul as her translator. Eklavya, the low-born lad, did not know the high caste law. Thus, poor polluted ones cannot be purified through arts of war. None told him Dronacharya, the warrior Brahmin of the bow, who taught the princes in silk robes, would one day cruelly strike the blow. Eklavya still fashioned faith, shaping his Drona from raw clay, and bowing to the guru's form gained archery and inner way. Adeptness came until one day he shot 7 arrows through the jaws of some stray dog, pinned down and skewered, the death shake rattling in its claws. Yudi then rolled over to play. "He's an English dog," joked Atul. "He understands you, madam." Now Drona, with his best disciple, watching, walked out from the trees. Arjuna, student general, could not command such expertise. Dronacharya, in a flash, now thought of rebel flags unfurled, inciting subdued tribes behind the greatest archer in the world. No, he must be one highborn, like Prince Arjuna, the hope and goal who had the ancestry to assert good politics of caste control. Drona called the boy. "Hey, come. How did you perfect your game?" "By offering all to you, my lord. I worshipped. You improved my aim." "Is it true, madam?" she continued. "I appreciate you for all this love, and I see you practice every day. Now, as per custom, give my homage," the crafty guru made his play. "Though none can match a Eklavya who has shot upward from a slum, the future's arrowhead is Arjuna. Thus I demand your severed thumb." So Eklavya, the faithful slave, gave Dakshina the guru fee. Ever since, dissenting Dalits stretch the bow, but hold thumb free. He placed it at the guru's feet, a blemish on the Brahmin law. Now Dronacharya is best recalled for stealing thumbs, not arts of war. Thus she passed her days of wet and hot inside her hut with a happy yellow dog, neighbor kids arriving between the storms. Avoiding the Brahmin and fire of Mandir, she turned inside and found another place. Nataraja danced before her eyes. She saw and heard his damuru, the little drum shaped like an hourglass, sounding syllables that make and break the universal law. There was Ganga Devi in Shiva's hair, unbraiding herself from his flowing dreadlocks. Outside, rain had not let up, and tractor blades were ploughing the road. Then she heard Atul. "Madamji, Madamji!" She rose and let him in. You've been listening to Foreign Madam and the White Yogi, a novel in verse by Chris Mooney Singh. For more of my writing, you can go to my website at chrismooneysingh.com, or you can navigate there through the link seen in the program notes. See you next week.
Thank you. Singh, Chris Mooney Singh. I don't know how to follow that. I was going to say, let's all eat pancakes. It's the day for pancakes. If you know why, then have pancakes. Pancakes, I tell you. Yeah, I didn't go to the Night Vale thing. I wasn't feeling so good that day. I was looking forward to it, and then that day was like, I just have those days. What is it? Seasonal affective disorder? Depression? Just being frickin' crazy? I don't know. God, I was tired. I get tired all the time. I got tired of my Space Navigator, apparently, because I dropped it, broke it. I've dropped it billions of times, which probably broke it in the end, after 4 years. So I Amazon Primed another. It'll be here Monday. I thought I had one on the shelf, but I guess I gave it away. Maybe I should order two of these things. Or if I order two, then I'll see one. Oh, yeah, that one. That's where I put it on the shelf. Maybe I need to clean up the shelf. Maybe I just need to play Neil's story. Huh, how's that for a transition? Okay, I need to work on it.
Hey there. This is a story about time, and it's called Junkie. You can get it all at Mr. Johnson's Time Emporium. Pop books of individual seconds, hours sealed in a can, tanks containing whole years if you've got the cash. Time is money, Mr. Johnson says. And since he opened, I've never missed a deadline. Never hit one, either. Because I can always get a couple more days, I never feel like I have to start anything. And it's getting bad. I've got so much time that nothing ever gets done. I'm almost 50, but I've not had my 22nd birthday. I'd quit if it didn't mean facing my credit card bill. So, that was my story. And if you like that, I've got loads more at neilmerton.co.uk. Thanks for listening.
Loads more. And it's not a load, either. It's not a burden. It's something that will lift you up when you go there. Trust me on this. Go there. Go there and leave comments. Many comments. Let Neil know what you think of his loads of stories. Maybe we should have load as a topic. Okay, adding it to the list. Or have I already done that? I'm not sure. I've pretty much hit every word that has multiple meanings. Here, let's bring up a note and do plus and do load topics for podcast. I thought I already had one of these. Oh, yeah, I do. Whoops. brains. Yes, it's time for the zombies. And whose brains will they be eating this week? Tom's. Tom, tell us a story and let us eat your brains. Have we already done a Zombies Week?
Hello, Night People. Tom here. And I have a story tonight. A continuation of a well-defined relationship, part 40. A silence gathered around the grotto. Father Tony was joined by Reverend Morehouse. Not you two. We are not going to have a dipped in nostalgia band of brothers. Where has the time gone moment? Yes, Captain Proctor. We needn't bring up what happened in that valley. Just a death of dreams. And by my account, we're the last still standing. As if the years themselves fell away, he was looking into the eyes of Lieutenant Morehouse and Staff Sergeant Anthony DeMonaco. It will not go well, said the doctor. Never does, replied the priest. Where are the guns, Morehouse?
Thank you, Tom, but I already know where the guns are. You see, I have this thing called Tile. They're little tiles. You put the tiles on things, and then from your smartphone, you can find them. This is not an advertisement, because it's not available yet. I funded the Kickstarter. That's right. I put money into the Kickstarter, and I'm getting tiles. You can put them on cats. You can put them on dogs. You can put them on small children. You can put them on people that you want to know where they are. Put them in their purse. Put them in their wallet. Put them up their butt. Oh, sorry. Thank you, Tom. Maybe I shouldn't have gone there. Maybe instead I should back away and see what Muncie... Oh, wait, is Muncie calling us penguins? Maybe wrecking penguins. I'm not sure. Wrecking cubes, wrecking both. The... Oh, it gets so confusing. I don't know. Where is the time gone? Oh, wait. Here it is. Muncie.
Greetings, penguins. Muncie here, by which I mean hello. My name is Christopher Monroe. I'm from Calgary, Alberta, and I'm here to reintroduce myself as per Lawrence's suggestion. I'm a horror author of both long and short fiction, I've turned up on several podcasts since I started submitting my work. I'm in the middle of editing my second book, Day Job, and I appreciate genuinely the opportunity this weekly challenge gives me to stretch out a little and try new things. Though I admit I probably retreat back into my comfort zone of gaggy stories and quippy banter more often than I should. Still, I like gags, and I like quips, and that's just me. And yes, I am more likely to answer to Munsey than I am to Chris, should you ever meet me in person. So yeah, there. Sincerity. I am now reintroduced. Weird, right? Let's do a story. Floating Through the Day by Christopher Monroe. You shiver, then whimper, naked and drained. You assure me you'll only need a minute. It takes more like an hour. I'd like you to stay, but you need to be at work in the morning. So do I, and I totally respect your decision to sleep in your own bed. You thieve my pajama pants and t-shirt, swimming in their size, and I walk you to your car, kissing you as you climb in, watching you drive away. On the way back, it's my turn to shiver. My weekend is drawing to a close. Where has the time gone? I've written a book, have a blog, and tweet, but I suspect you already know where, and I've already said plenty about myself. See you next week, Penguins, when I'll be back with dick jokes and banter, which I think we can all agree would be for the best.
Should I make that a topic, dick jokes and banter? I know I already want to make the word fuck a topic one time. Maybe it'll be the last one ever, when this podcast reaches the peak of popularity and then ended on a high note, which would have happened back in 2009. Or 8. 7. Thank you, Munsey. Little moment of clarity, I suppose. Oh, I should go over to Serendipity. You get clarity from Serendipity, don't you? I do. Let's look deep in the mirror of serendipity and see what we see, hear what we hear, taste what we taste.
The Time Bomb is a Trojan horse, impervious to any antivirus software. It sits on your hard drive, waiting to strike, then at the worst possible moment. It starts to suck up your precious time, slowing your system to a crawl. It mocks your deadlines with rogue updates, unexpected restarts, and inexplicable crashes. Misinterprets keystrokes, drops connections and hides files, and always, when time is of the essence. It comes pre-installed with every computer, PC or Mac. And there's no escape. So next time you wonder, where has the time gone? Try switching off, and maybe you'll work it out.
I used to call that solitaire. There are people I know who would play that for hours and hours and hours, and I thought, there are better games than that. And then I realized, wait, why aren't you doing your job? Candy Crush. Oh, thank you, Serendipity. I should have gotten laundry started, shouldn't I? Oh, great, not again. Oh, well. Let's move on to Zach Man, and I'll think about laundry. Think about laundry. Zach Man, what do you have this week?
Hi, honey. Where is the time? I bought some from the guy at the farmer's market with the Volkswagen 412 Squareback, and I am looking for the empty jar to fill, said Zach. Don't worry, dear. I'm sure you'll find it. I'm sure I saw it recently. Have you checked the top shelf of the dishwasher? I meant to put away the dishes, but could not find the time, replied Connie. We haven't used much since our baby left for college, remarked Zach. Connie teased, we both worked, but tried to give our child all the time in the world.
Thank you, Zach Man. I thought about doing a Relay for Life kind of thing this year. You know, a year or two ago when there were so many people doing stories that one week, you were wondering what the hell happened. And it was that Relay for Life thing. And, well, then few of those people stuck around. It was a one-hit wonder. They just wanted me to throw my money at some sort of people walking around the track to raise awareness and funds and whatever for cancer. But it turns out that there are some studies now that say that chemotherapy makes your death worse and more suffering. What cost is that additional time? Where has the time gone? Maybe if it was me, I'd think differently. Let's try something. I'm going to go ahead and rub myself with radioactive substances while you listen to Danny, who might be a radioactive substance. I'm not sure. Let's find out, shall we? Where has the time gone?
Hello, hello. Danny Dwyer here with my entry for this week's challenge, weekly challenge 412, Where Has All the Time Gone? Brought to you by DannyDwyer.wordpress.com. Visit it sometime. So here we are with this entry. The world is asking, where has all the time gone? The negative news about the crisis in Crimea, the missing airplane in Malaysia, and Eddie Van Halen previously wanting to join Kiss as their guitarist because he was fed up with arguing with David Lee Roth. Left all the time so fed up with humanity it decided to stop and take a vacation in the Bahamas. Top physicists and world leaders now question exactly when all the time will come back so we can resume destroying ourselves, and whether all the time will be too hungover to resume moving forward. Now, and if you enjoyed that entry, again, come to DannyDwyer.wordpress.com, and, you know, I'm actually coming up with some additional stuff for once, and I'll have it published soon. Have fun.
That's right. Go to his site. Leave a comment. Leave a comment or two. Danny, can you approve the comment that I left? I put one up there. It's waiting for approval. I need your approval. Don't we all do? I don't need your approval. I don't need anybody's approval. I don't need anybody's approval. In fact, I will move on to the next person and say, Chelsea, red carpet, walk down it, smile, turn to the cameras, and speak.
Where Did the Time Go? By Chelsea. There was a sucking hole in his life. He wasn't sure when he'd first noticed it. He'd always felt it there on the edges of everything, eating away at each moment. He tried to keep a hold of things that were important, family, friends, his sanity, but little by little each moment was stolen, devoured by the sucking hole in the world. But where did the time go? Where was it actually going? Was there a physical place that he could go to get it back? And that's when he built the machine, and no one ever saw him again.
But did he ever see himself? Did he ever have a mirror? Do you bring a mirror with you when you travel through time? Travel through time, he said. Travel through time. I went back in time and said that. I thought about it. I added it later. Does that make me a time traveler? I'm not sure. Are we traveling through time? Yes, one way. One-way ticket, baby, e-ticket, first class for some. Not enough, some people say. Coffee. Oh, thank you. Chelsea. Seeker Ray. I pronounced it right because you told me how to. Sorry. Looks like we have someone coming back who isn't just a hit and run, and they've come back and come back and come back and, well, the Seeker, just, they're here. So let us stop for a moment and load up the new story.
This is the first live voice of the Second Life avatar, Seeker Ray. And this is my contribution to this week's 100-word stories on the topic, Where Has the Time Gone? They say your life flashes rapidly in front of your eyes when you know you're about to die some sudden death. Who are they, and how do they know this? Wouldn't the people who know be dead? She returned to watching a particularly embarrassing moment from junior high, vivid in its detail, right down to replicating the pain in her gut from the long-ago angst. That was a random cruel life review. And why hasn't anyone ever remarked that these flashes can happen at other times? She continued her reflection and her blank stare at the Windows loading screen.
Thank you, Seeker. I just had Tinny up on the table. She was walking around and sniffing my nose and... Happy little cat. Then I put her back on the ground. I like Mist, who jumps up here and then knocks everything around and gets in the way of the mouse. Even though I can use the trackpad. Trackpad. God, I miss my space navigator. I miss it. Oh well. Another one will be here on Monday. The last time I had one break, it was around Christmas time, about 4 years ago. And I was buying one for my step-nephew. I don't know what you would call it. But I had one packed up and ready. And I was like, you know, can we just delay shipping this? And so I had one shipped overnighted. And I was using the nephew one because I'm addicted to the damn things, okay? Even though I use them, you know, well, I use them for flying and this and that and swooshing around. I don't even use Google Earth anymore. You know? What else can it be used for? Not bashing kitties in the head, then you break it. So. Maybe I should just say, hey, it's time for spate. Boom. And then go. You want to try that? Okay. Hey, it's time for spate. Boom.
Hey, it's me, Spate. Hey, before my story this week, I just want to apologize. I meant to leave comments for everybody, but I just ran out of time. I don't know where it went. Well, that being said, my story this week is called Bottles and Needles. And here it is. She knows where time goes. She followed him after the betrayal. Across alleys with dark corners, down sewers and through tunnels. All the way she hung not far behind him. He stopped in a dank cavern and sat upon a rock. She quietly moved closer to see his skinny nakedness was covered with tattoos that looked like blue-green bruises against his pale gray skin. And then she saw the ground all around was littered with bottles and dirty needles. Heroin. That's how he was manipulating the seconds and minutes and hours and days. Bottled smack. Time is a junkie.
Thank you, Spate. I'm a junkie for your stories, and by using a clean template every week, I get clean needles, no cross-infection, unless you share this on Twitter, on Facebook, on Plus, Google Plus, or other wacky places. Who actually does do that? Who shares it elsewhere? Who tries to spread the language as a virus? Ooh, thunder. I should check the weather. Hold on. Okay. I've got a whole section called weather in my nav bar here. Hold on. Light rain, which is why I heard boom. Yeah. Let's go down here. And there's some red to the east, whatever. Animate map. And that's like Wreck-It Ralph. Ooh. Ooh, colors. You don't want a weather report. And now the emotional weather report. Next up we have Cliff. We'll see what he's come up with, and not many more stories left this week, so let's savor the time we have left together. Cliff, don't leave me.
All right, Eddie. You were the last one seen with it. So where is it?
I don't know, I tell you. I didn't take it.
Don't lie to me, Eddie.
I'm telling you, when I left, it was right there in the bottle.
And now that sealed bottle is just empty?
It must have leaked out or something.
I'm warning you.
You ain't got nothing on me. I got rights.
Detective Crookshanks rubbed his eyes. Eddie wasn't going to crack. It looked like the lab report was right. Nobody stole the liquid time. It just slipped into the future. Well, that's it for me this week. I was going to write a second story, but I ran out of... Well, you understand. Thanks. Talk to you next week.
Thank you, Cliff. You have me thinking about a lot of things, and then not thinking about others. Where's the balance? Where is the time? What? More? Okay, we've got more stories. How about one from Norval Joe? Will that do? What are you clawing up? I need to check out what this cat is clawing up. I'll be back.
Hello, this is Philip Norval Joe Carroll of NorvalJoe.com, and this is my entry for the weekly challenge number 412 with the prompt of, Where Has the Time Gone? Now, last week, Lawrence asked us all to introduce ourselves as fill in the blank, but I'm actually Phil in Modesto, so that's how I'm going to introduce myself. Hi, this is Phil in Modesto in the northern Mexico state of California. And no, I speak Spanish here, and I've been writing for about 6 years, primarily young adult urban fantasy. I'm really old. I'm like 53. No, yeah, almost 54. Married for 32 years, 3 kids, 2.5 grandchildren, and I just am in love with myself. So here's my story. Durgle followed Widow Finkelstein to a small cafe. Either she didn't notice him following her, or, with his changed status in reality, she didn't know him anymore. She sat in a booth, leaning across the table, holding hands with a man a little older than she. Durgle sat in the next booth, his back to hers. "Where has the time gone, Harold?" she asked. "That's my point, Beulah. Time's moving on. Are you going to marry me or not?" A long pause followed his question. When she finally spoke, Durgle heard happiness in her voice. "Yes, Harold, I will." Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Wait, 2.5 grandchildren? How does that happen? I thought you were supposed to have 2.5 kids. 2.5 grandchildren? That's just creepy. Cool! Post pictures. Thank you, Philip Norval Joe Carroll, in Modesto, Northern Mexico. What? Oh, we got one more? Oh, that's right. I keep forgetting about Planet Z. I don't think he'll ever introduce himself. He's the Mad Bard from Planet Z. Far, far, far out there. Millions and billions of light years from a dying civilization, sending out the stories of madness into the ether, wondering if Neil deGrasse Tyson will ever hear them. Instead, it will probably be Neil Patrick Harris, and then whatever. I'm telling you, that I haven't seen that Cosmos reboot. I probably should, because I could use a cosmic calendar. I'm telling you. You know, Miss July on the cosmic calendar? Whoa! Sorry, what was I saying? You know, in the last minute, there was Jesus. Jesus at the last minute. That's funny. Not really. Here we go. Planet Z.
Every week,
The Time magazine moves from the mailbox to the table by the front door. Then it moves to the countertop in the bathroom, or the bathroom floor if a cat knocks it there. After a day or so in the bathroom, it lands in the stack of magazines next to my wife's easy chair. It will float between the bathroom countertops for a few days, and then end up in the basket next to the toilet if there is anything there for further reading. And then the trash, along with all the other old catalogs and magazines.
Hey, you out there. Show's over. Thank you to everyone who is a part of the weekly challenge here on the 100 Word Stories podcast. One a day until the day I die.com. You know that one? The topic was Where Is the Time Gone? And we had a whole bunch of stories about that. A whole bunch. What are you doing? You would think after a year you would find all the things to claw up and destroy. No. Well, now you fall off of it. What a genius cat. Next week, Any Town But Funky Town is the challenge. I want to see what you come up with. I want to see what you say, what you smell, what you taste, what you feel on this topic. You got to find a town that's right for you, and it's not Funky Town. Find yourself that town. Maybe it's Modesto, but we'll see. Anyway, that's it. See you all next week. Until then, thank you for listening, and as always, keep it brief.